You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi, welcome to the show. It is Monday, March the 29th, a date that will have been ringed in many of your diaries if you live in Great Britain, because today marks the first phase of the government's lifting of lockdown restrictions, which for our tiny world means that owners can go back to the racecourses and amateur riders can ride against professionals once again. It has been a weekend, however, of notable endeavour on the international stage, and just trying to take stock of as much of it as is possible. Todd Pletcher won the Florida Derby, his sixth, with known agenda now amongst the leading fancies for the run for the roses. What happened in Australia? Well, we spoke to William Haggis about the possibility of a Dabe winning the Randvet Stakes at Rose Hill. He couldn't quite manage it, went down fighting to the very, very talented mare, Very Elegant. Haggis did have a winner down there, however, with Favourite Moon, who took the Group 3. There was also success for British import Annabel Neesham. We spoke to her on this podcast a few weeks ago. She had her first Group 1 with her with Moonga in the Rose Hill Guineas. But fair to say, the international stars were the Gosdens, not just John, but his son Thady as well, as he now shares his licence. They had five winners on Saturday, including the Lincoln at Doncaster, but most notably that sparkling double in Dubai. Of course, Lord North streaking clear with the Dubai turf under Frankie Dettori, and Mishriff, what a warrior he is, taking the Shima Classic. David Yates from the Daily Mirror is with me today. David, how would you sum up the endeavour of the Gosdens over the weekend?
My reaction would be, ta-da, Nick. And that's because there's a strong element of theatre and also of occasion, I think, to the Gosdens' success this weekend. Sometimes in the press room, journalists ask each other, what's the line here after a horse has won? But there'd be no such murmurings this weekend, I'll wager. A new training partnership was launched last Friday, when Thady's name was put on the joint licence at Clare Haven. They wanted to get off to a winning start, and they did so with Regent. Then, of course, there was the very poignant victory of Hakiki in the Lincoln at Doncaster on Saturday. That came 3 days after the death was announced of Sheikh Hamdan Al Maktoum. Hakiki, of course, carried to victory the colours of his daughter Hissa. And the significance of that race doesn't end there, does it? Because it was a landmark for Benoît de la Sayette. He's the 18-year-old Gosden's first apprentice for three decades, who's impressed with a near 1-in-3 strike rate on the all-weather this winter. But this was de la Sayette's very first ride on turf, and it results in victory in one of flat racing's most historic handicaps. Meanwhile, at Maidan, we've got Frankie Dettori, the elder statesman, of course, and Lord North rocketing back to form in the Dubai turf. Gosden has trained with distinction on both sides of the Atlantic, where the preference for different racing surfaces, turf here, dirt over there, means we can't find one horse with the capability to bestride the ocean. Well, maybe that's until now. Enter stage left, Mishriff, who adds the Shima Classic to his win in the Saudi Cup, the world's richest horse race, and in the process proves his ability not only on the two surfaces, but also his staying power for a mile and a half. Just imagine if Mishriff and David Egan could win the Arc at Longchamp on the 3rd of October and then follow up in the Breeders' Cup Classic at Del Mar 34 days later. I'd say, Nick, if training racehorses ever fails John and Thady Gosden, they could certainly receive a call from the theatre impresario Cameron McIntosh. They should assist him with the stage management of his biggest productions in London's glittering West End. Phineas Taylor Barnum has nothing on there.
Well, even Barnum's circus could never have worked without the talent. And you've mentioned Frankie Dettori, and you've mentioned Benoît de la Sayette. David Egan was the star act as far as the Dubai Shima Classic was concerned, because he was charged with marshalling Mishriff to success from a wide gate over a distance much further than that over which he had won the Saudi Cup on dirt a few weeks ago. But where do you find the 21-year-old star the Monday morning after he's won one of the world's richest turf races?
This morning, I'm in West Drayton, just outside Heathrow, in the Holiday Inn. So, passing a bit of time, so it's good to speak to you, Nick.
Well, I'm glad I can be of service. So, how long have you got to do hotel quarantine before you can go home?
So, I've got 10 full days to go. So, obviously, I arrived there at about 11 o'clock to Heathrow, and I was in Heathrow Airport for probably 4 or 5 hours getting through customs and whatnot. It was very busy, and then got shipped off to on a bus to the hotel room, and that's me for the next 10 days.
So, how are you going to pass your time?
Thankfully, my father is after dropping off a Richard Parham simulator to the room and some gym equipment, so I've rearranged the room. The couches are halfway up the walls, upside down, to make a bit of room, so we'll make do what we have.
Now, just for those who aren't clear or aware of this, a Richard Parham simulator is not a life-size model of the former jockey Richard Parham. It is a it's an equisizer, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's like, I suppose for a Formula One driver, it would be like the chair we have the steering wheel playing on a PlayStation or that gamer console, and it's a kind of probably half the size of a real horse, but it still has mechanics, and you're able to keep fit and use your whip, and it'll definitely pass a bit of time.
And are you allowed to go outside at all? Can you get walked outside?
So we're allowed to be escorted down to the car park and have, I think, 15 minutes, so I'm told, give or take. I don't know if that's per day or per time, but I haven't gone outside just yet, but I'll probably find out more. But there's not a lot of time you can get fresh air. There's no windows in the room, so it's going to be a bit muggy for the next 10 days.
Now, listen, worst things happen at sea. While you have my sympathies, you are coming back having won another one of the world's richer races on Mishriff. What a special horse this is. We knew he was tough, but I wasn't quite sure how tough.
Yeah, look, he was fantastic, wasn't he, to be able to do the complete opposite he did a couple of weeks ago prior in Riyadh. He jumped quick and was travelling really strongly over 9 furlongs behind 2 fast American horses on the dirt, and he was able to do the complete opposite when jumping a bit slower, relaxing at the back of a pack on a averagely run race over a mile and a half, and was able to quicken up the straight and stay out the mile and a half, which it was an absolute credit to the horse. He's a real privilege to be a part of.
There can't be many horses you've ridden who, when you jump out of the stalls, you can put them exactly where you want to put them and they'll just drop their head and race kindly for you.
Yeah, look, it's a credit to the horse. He's got a great institution. He's got a great mind. Similar to Riyadh, he was training very well in the morning. He went on to the turf track at Maidan every day leading up to the race, so he got a feeler of the grass around there. But look, I've never, in recent times anyway, you haven't heard of many horses to be able to do that, run on the highest level on dirt over 9 furlongs and then win a group one over a mile and a half 4 or 5 weeks later. It's unbelievable, really, Nick.
Do you think that he's always going to be at an advantage going abroad because he can just handle different things much better than most horses can?
Yeah, he's got a very strong mind. I think he's gone to Riyadh twice. He's gone to Maidan. He's gone to France twice. He's done more travelling than probably English horses in the country, you know, so it's he's able to take it well. He doesn't lose much condition. He actually nearly looks better when he goes out and travels and gets a bit of sun on his back. But no, everything's gone really smoothly so far, and hopefully it continues for his European campaign this year.
How much confidence does John Gosden give you when you discuss the races?
Yeah, look, in Riyadh and in Maidan, I was able to ride him the week prior leading up to the race every morning, and just sitting on top of the horse, it fills you full of confidence. Just the way he trains, he's a really fluid mover, whether you ride him on the dirt or the turf, which I've never ridden a horse quite like him. So look, Mr. Gosden's used to these top class horses, and obviously fills you with confidence on how well he's going, but me just sitting on him in the mornings, that's good enough for me, you know.
And John was saying yesterday that, you know, all the big races during the summer, Eclipse, International, those sort of races, and then looking toward the Arc at the end of the year. So lots for you to look forward to. Who are going to be your big backup team this year? Obviously, you've got your association with Prince Faisal, but how do you see your sort of day-to-day life panning out when you finally get out of the Holiday Inn?
Yeah, look, obviously I've got a big connection with Mr. Roger Varian. I was on my apprenticeship with him and still part of the team there, so I'll be straight back riding out there every morning once I get back out of quarantine, get to know the horses again, and hopefully start the season off as I've had over the last couple of months. I couldn't have asked for a better winter. Had a successful time in Bahrain. Obviously went to Riyadh, went back to England for 2 weeks and had rode for 3 days and had three winners, and then went back out to Bahrain and Maidan and continued that good streak of form. So if I can keep that going for the summer season, it's going to be an exciting year.
David, thanks so much for talking to me. I hope the days don't crawl by too slowly, and that the Richard Perham simulator helps you keep in good shape.
Yeah, it sure will. Thank you very much, Nick.
David Egan there, coming to you from the Holiday Inn in West Drayton, David Yates. But it's a small price to pay.
Well, it certainly is when you consider what must have gone into the jockey's bank account over the last few weeks. The Saudi Cup followed by the Shima Classic. It's a nice haul, isn't it? Where by the time we're one day into the turf season. One thing one should say about this, Nick, is, and I know I've said this before with relation to David Egan and Mishriff, but when he was jocked off by Frankie Dettori for the Kipco British Champion Stakes at Ascot last October, he took that momentary reverse, admittedly, with, I thought, great grace and commendable grace and sportsmanship. And so he said, one day my day will come, and it's probably come a little bit quicker maybe than he thought. But yeah, I mean, a few days in the surrounds of the Holiday Inn won't be too bad. I was in the one in Cheltenham during festival week, and I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. Staff were very attentive.
He did make the point to me, David, after the interview, that William Buick maybe got the worst end of the deal. He apparently is in a less handsomely appointed Holiday Inn and is with his partner and young child. That could get quite tough after 10 days, I'd say.
Yeah, that would be very tricky. But he seems a patient man, Will. That'll test it.
I mean, let's talk about the horse, Mishriff, because as David said, he's not just a good horse. He is now potentially a great horse. Could this be the horse that defines the flat season in 2021, do you think?
Well, I think it's early days to be saying that, because obviously we've got to see what else comes out of Clare Haven, the rest of Newmarket, not to mention Aidan O'Brien's stable. But let's just say that as we're now at the end of March, he couldn't have done an awful lot more, could he, with the victory in the Saudi Cup and now at the Shima Classic. Interestingly, last year, it may seem odd to say this about a horse who won the Prix du Jockey Club, Nick, but I think we really perceived, or we rather perceived, Mishriff last year as, you know, a pound or two below the top horses in Clare Haven, which of course at the time included Enable, who was going for that history-making third arc. But yeah, this season it looks very promising, doesn't it? And the fact that he's able to show his best between 10 and 12 and on two markedly different surfaces means that Connections have really got choices, and they're delicious choices, aren't they, for the next 8 months. We could see this horse in Group 1 races on turf in Europe and obviously Grade 1 events on dirt in America. It's some choice they've got.
Though Gosden already is fighting slightly shy of the Breeders' Cup Classic, saying that having trained with significant success at Del Mar when he was based in Southern California, he always felt when he was there that they should pick the winning line up and move it 100 yards further away from the bend. And he feels the short straight there over 10 furlongs in the Classic wouldn't be to Mishriff's liking. So it seems as though he's slightly sort of backing off that as the end of year target. But there's a hell of a long way to go between now and then.
Yeah, there is. And let's face it, John Gosden's MO isn't to say, right, we're going to go out and now we're going to win these, is it? You know, he's naturally, when talking to the media, he's pretty cautious. And I think that, yes, the evidence of the two wins in 2021 would suggest that a length of straight for Mishriff to wind up is beneficial. But I would think at the moment that, as I say, we're not even into April. I would have thought that whilst publicly he's cautious, he must be licking his lips at least at the prospect of being able to challenge for a race like this. He's trained with distinction on both sides of the Atlantic, and it's very likely at this stage that Mishriff can have a presence in both countries.
So a surprisingly rousing start then to the flat season, both domestically and internationally, thanks to all those exploits. The weather is warming up significantly this week in the UK. The lockdown restrictions are easing. Owners, amateurs, back on the race courses. Dave, it seems as though this long winter might finally be coming to some sort of an end.
Yeah, it does. You know, one hopes that there isn't going to be a false dawn aspect to this. But of course, as the vaccination programme continues to do pretty well with the odd hiccup, the return of owners, as you say, that the fact that amateurs are now back in action. Yeah, it does. I say that with a something of a sigh, just because I hope that we're not going to be dealt a blow that sets us back. We've had the odd false dawn. I think it looked as though things were going really well in late summer last year. And then, of course, we've been put right back to square one in the interim. But let's hope that this is genuinely a step forward back to normality. I think the date round everyone's diary on everyone's calendar is June the 21st, when hopefully we might be back to normal. And this is certainly a step towards that.
But let's pivot again, Dave, back to the jumps, because we still got them. Small matter of the Randox Health Grand National, which will take place on Saturday week. We know there's going to be no Tiger Roll, but he could yet turn up at Aintree in the Betway Bowl. He'll either go there or the Irish Grand National. Connections are keeping us guessing.
Yeah, they like to keep us guessing, don't they, with Tiger Roll, a horse who is pretty much perennially in the headlines. That was certainly one of the most warming stories of a real clutch of them at the Cheltenham Festival. Tiger Roll's return to winning form. He's a wonderful horse. And the Betway Bowl, Eddie O'Leary, I think, said to you when you broke that story that if he doesn't win the Betway Bowl, then he's not worthy of a mark of 166. So even without Tiger Roll running in the big one, the Randox Grand National, it looks like we're still going to have arguments between the O'Learys and the redoubtable Martin Greenwood, the Grand National handicapper, about what weight the horse ought to have. Amazing.
Now, the only argument in racing that's more predictable than one between the O'Learys and the British handicapper is one that surrounds fixtures, funding and prize money, or in the case of Great Britain, a lack of it. So I've been talking to the Racecourse Association boss, David Armstrong, partly because of the report that was released yesterday by Ernst & Young on behalf of the Betting and Gaming Commission, saying that racing receives £350 million a year from the gambling industry. But of course, the prize money pot is only about 160 million. But also because the loan, the COVID related loan that has been given to racing by the government, has now manifested itself in the shape of £21 million to the levy board rather than the £40 million that might have been granted as a loan to the racecourses. And I began by asking David Armstrong why that was the case.
Well, the biggest challenge, Nick, was the structure under which the loans were offered. And so what would have happened is racecourses, if they had taken up loans, would have ended up with significant extra debt on their balance sheet, with repayment terms that are quite attractive, but still having to repay that debt over a period of time. And of course, many racecourses have taken additional debt or have debt on their balance sheet from before COVID. So what you're then finding is that racecourses would be accumulating debt on debt and actually making their own financial position very difficult. So the structure of the loan made it hard for racecourses to take the money directly. And hence why we came up with the idea of asking the levy board to step in as the intermediary, if you like.
So the obvious question is, why £21 million and not £40 million that the government was prepared to put in our direction?
Well, once we settled on the levy board route as a way to go, the discussions with government were then about, well, what does the levy board spend its money on? And what the government didn't want to do was to particularly see their funding directly, if you like, into prize money. So what we then talked to them about, well, actually, the levy board spends money on a lot of other things. And that includes integrity costs. It includes veterinary research. It includes, you know, many different things connected to the people side of the sport, etc. So what we said to them was, well, why don't you, as Sport England in this case, because they're the intermediary body, why don't you fund all the non-prize money elements? And the non-prize money elements add up to £21 million.
Right, so that's what you were allowed to borrow, essentially.
Essentially, yes. And if we followed that levy board route, so that if we're then looking at what the maximum amount is, it is based on what we've actually spent. So it's like reimbursement of what we actually spent from the period from the 1st of October 2020. So there was an actual very detailed calculation that came out of £21 million. It's not a sort of random number, if you like.
Prize money is a hot topic again at the moment, owners leaving the country, and there's been an awful lot of a very heated debate over this through the last week. I was interested in some numbers put forward by Michael Duggar from the Betting and Gaming Council today that said that the betting industry contributed £350 million to the sport as a whole as a year. The annual prize money figure, notwithstanding COVID, is around £160, £170 million. Where's the rest of the money going?
Well, it goes into lots and lots of different places. And of course, you know, I think the £350 million is about right in that report, although I haven't read the full Ernst & Young report behind it yet. But the number's about right. It goes to fund lots of things. It goes to fund, for example, all the costs of the production of on the media rights side of things. It goes to fund the core expenses of race courses. It goes to fund some of the areas that we just talked about in terms of the 21 million. So that 21 million on an annual basis is included in what that money is spent on. So that's money that comes into the levy board and is spent on other things apart from prize money. Only about a bit less than two-thirds of levy board spending is spent on prize money. So that's another example. Some of the costs connected there, of course, are about providing the integrity services into the sport. So it's spread out widely around the sport as a whole. It includes some overheads for race courses as well, and that sort of thing. But so there's not one place that all that money goes to. It is, if you like, the fuel for the whole sport.
But that's a lot of money. That's a big difference, isn't it? If you're calculating it correctly, that's £190 million that is going into the sport that is not being spent on the sports prize fund, and that it exceeds the amount that is being spent on the sports prize fund. At what point do you, as the RCA chief executive, have to get your race courses together and say, the crisis point has become too intense and we are losing too many horses to other jurisdictions?
Well, I think there's several questions in there, Nick, in a sense that, of course, of that 350, race courses themselves and the racing as a whole doesn't receive all of it directly. Some of it is spent on expenditure before it gets anywhere near a race course or anyone else. So there's a little bit of that in there. There's a point, obviously, that we want to make sure that we can offer as much prize money as possible to ensure that, you know, as you say, we don't lose horses to overseas jurisdictions and that sort of thing. But it's not as simple as saying, right, well, we'll just put more prize money in. As you're aware, and I've spoken to you before on this podcast about, is that race courses are in a very, very difficult financial position. And yet are still striving to offer as much executive contribution as they possibly can. The levy board is reducing the amount of money it's able to spend on prize money as we go through this crisis, and therefore the race courses are having to step up and put in more executive contribution. So I would be hopeful as we emerge from COVID with spectators in place that we'll see race course contributions rise significantly, certainly the latter part of 2021, and I would expect very much so into 2022.
David Armstrong there, the chief executive of the Racecourse Association. I wanted to end, Dave Yates, on a really positive story that dropped this morning, that the British Racing School in Newmarket has developed a groundbreaking degree with Harper University. It's the first of its kind to help staff working in UK horse racing enhance their career opportunities within the industry. Now, if you'd had the opportunity to study horse racing, would you have?
Oh, I wish I could. Well, when I was supposed to study the law, I used to study horse racing, well, far much more at that stage. I remember a tutor saying that he had heard that I was spending inordinate amounts of my time studying horse racing. He was absolutely right. But yes, I certainly would like to have studied horse racing when I was an undergraduate. This is a really worthy initiative because on the one hand, there's always a temptation, isn't there, from old timers to say, oh, whatever happened to proper degrees, you know. But if, from a horse racing perspective, if this brings younger people into the industry via this course or these courses, then surely that's a benefit to the sport as a whole. So, you know, you and I are, well, we're not the same age. I'm significantly older than you, Nick. But over the last couple of decades, there has been a proliferation of different courses that undergraduates can study. And this is a very welcome one for the horse racing industry.
And the key differential here is that you can be within the industry and do this two-year foundation degree simultaneously. So what I think the real benefit is that it is making the existing workforce more qualified. So it is going to be a more skilled and more expert workforce working closely with people and horses, which is, you know, everything we should aspire to, I think.
Well, I was going to use the word aspirational. That's exactly right. That if you're working in the industry currently and you want to become better qualified, you want essentially better job prospects, then this is a very good way to go about that.
Okay. Do you have a tip for me for today?
I do, Nick, and we go to Wolverhampton this afternoon for the opening race. It's the Apprentice Handicap, and I'm going with Critical Thinking. Did a piece in the Sunday Mirror with Laura Pearson, who's trying to close the gap on Marco Gianni at the top of the table for the all-weather apprentice title. Critical Thinking, a good second at Wolverhampton last time, has won over the course and distance previously. I hope can give Laura another winner. 4.50 race at Wolverhampton, number 7, Critical Thinking.
Dave, thank you. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow. That was Monday, March the 29th. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.